of therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Now, we know how this goes. Many of you, you've gone through the process quite a few times. You give birth to a son, you raise the son, they get old enough. And eventually the hope is that they go and they don't stay in the house forever. Now, I've always been the opinion that my boys can stay with me for as long as they need to. Personally, I would much rather them stay with me to save money before they've got to go out and fall into like a rental situation they can never get out of. Again, I'd rather more time with them than to see them fall into debt. But at some particular point, it's time to go. Get out of the house. What we see nowadays is more of a long-term dependency on parents. And what we should be teaching kids of both genders is some kind of reliance, right? We're teaching them the processes of things. How do you manage your checkbook? How do you make sure your stuff is paid on time? How do you build credit? How do you do these things? We're teaching them up to a certain point so that when they're old enough, they get out there and they've got both the mental maturity, the spiritual maturity, and hopefully the emotional maturity to go out there and do things. Now, of course, there are times where sometimes you kind of work it out where like the Smiths and the Eckleberries, where it's kind of a nice thing. Obviously, they've survived on their own. You can survive on your own. But there have been moments where mom and dad probably need them. I'm not talking about the idea of separating as far as that goes. That's not what we're talking about here, where we leave the house and we never come back into the house, although that can be helpful. What we're looking at is more of an emotional and a mental separation where mom and dad are no longer taking care of the kids. And something that's missing nowadays, and this is something I'll attest to, not just from a religious perspective, but from what I saw at work, as kids need to also learn when it's time to go and take care of the parents. Right? You long for that time where they're not only able to sustain themselves, but have it within them to go back and take care of mom and dad. Something I've seen very often is I'll get an elderly person at one of the apartment communities, and again, haven't worked there in a year, and hopefully those people have been taken care of. But I had a number of people who were in their late 60s, early 70s, dealing with dementia, inability to care for themselves, physical restrictions, and there was nobody that turned around to take care of them. And I would get phone calls on a regular basis from kids. Hey, mom hasn't picked up the phone in a while. Can you go over there? And you'd spend a large chunk of your day being the better half of those kids' brains when they could just come back and take care. So again, we're not talking about a physical separation between mom and dad. We're talking a mental, and a mom's no longer making your doctor's appointments for you at the age of 24, and you're able to take care of things and manage things on your own, and then eventually come back and you take care of mom and dad. So part of that is the leaving, but you're supposed to cleave to each other. I saw this and I thought it was hilarious. This young couple, they were arguing, and they were asking for advice. And they said, listen, we are arguing over, and I can't remember what it was dumb, but they're arguing over something ridiculous, and she went to her parents to see what her mommy said, and brought her mommy's opinion into the argument. And then when he wasn't persuaded, she went to his mommy, and his mommy disagreed with her. And now here they are on the verge they were saying divorce. I'm not sure if it was that bad because they couldn't agree on a simple thing having to do with chores. You understand? Not a big deal. But what have we done? I'll call your mom and we'll get other people. No, you leave those things behind and you cleave to each other. When Danielle and I were married, we did this thing with rope, and there was three strands. One was me, one was her, one was the Lord, and we wove together. And though our parents have made it very clear that they will at any time be prepared to help us, right? And there have been times, many times in our lives where they have had to help us. We've got Melody's birthday party coming up soon. Hopefully she's going to come and she's going to take the kids for a little bit so we can get things ready in the house, right? There are times where we take help. But ultimately, it needs to be understood that we are only strong as we are together. And that's how it is in a marriage. You can be surrounded by people. You can have all the support on earth. But if we are not as strong as we are together because we're like this, then we're not going to be a very stable relationship and we're going to have problems. You can even have zero issues whatsoever. I've known people who, through the deepest of storms, illnesses, death, loss of children, they've been able to survive those things as a couple. And I've met some people that can't survive their first 2 weeks into marriage because they can't figure out how to fill the dishwasher properly. You understand? There's a difference of strength that it all has to do with how close you are stuck together. And despite what a lot of people say, I don't think you can properly cleave to each other, right? Unless somebody in that relationship loves the Lord, right? The Lord's got to be holding that thing together. Now, Ephesians 5:25. Because right now we're picking on the man. The man ought to leave the house. He ought not to have to be taken care of. And I should also throw this in here, that a lot of men, they have a mommy their whole lives. Mommy takes care of my laundry. Mommy takes care of the cooking. And then when he gets older, he just replaces mommy with wife. Men, you should be able to handle your laundry. Men, you ought to be able to cook something. Somebody says, well, I don't cook. That's a woman's thing. And I kind of looked at him and I go, what, you don't like to eat? Like, you don't like eating? Like, who on earth does not like to eat? And why on earth would being able to cook be a gendered thing? Like, having a belly should mean you should know how to cook. Having taste buds should mean you know how to cook. I've known some amazing men who were cooks. I've known some amazing women who were cooks. There doesn't seem to be any divide down there, right? We ought to be able to take care of ourselves, men, and not having to rely, well, I'm a man, I shouldn't have to do chores. No, get your chores done. All right, you live in the house, 10-1, you're messing up at least half of the house. Get your stuff together. Ephesians 5:20, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So what are we supposed to do? Men, you're supposed to love your wife as Christ loved the church. Right now, think about it. What level of love? Well, as Christ loved the church, Christ gave himself for the church. Now, this goes in the face of a lot of this man owns the woman kind of aspect that we get inside. No, again, while the woman submits to the husband, she is not a secondary being, right? She is just as much a child of God as the man is, right? We are to love her, and with that comes a certain level of respect. Again, not in a I submit to my wife's authority kind of respect, not a respect she could beat me up kind of respect, which my wife probably could, but a level of I respect you, I respect your mind, I respect who you are. That's very valuable. Relationships have a hard time when we enter into the... again, the idea that my wife is not permitted to have an opinion, my wife is not permitted to do anything other than what I want. We need to come together on some things, right? The man's job is not to push his will throughout every aspect of the house, but to push the Lord's will through every aspect of the house. I've heard this, again, this kind of an illustration where the husband says, well, no, this is what we're setting the thermostat to, and because I am the man of the house, you will submit to my will over the thermostat. That's taking a man's home as his castle just a little too far. You understand? It is not the man's job to push his own will. Well, if I said we're having spaghetti today, we're having spaghetti today. You know what? Grow up just a hair. All right, that's not what we're talking about. It's, hey, we're going to church. That's the time for a man to put his foot down like that. But if it's over preferential things, love your wife. Now, that doesn't mean you always give in. It means what do? We compromise. My wife likes it warm in the house. I like it cold in the house. We compromise. It is warm in the house. Right? But that's not a matter of, well, she got her way or I got my way. I love her. Right? And I, you know what? It only further encourages me to lose weight in the summer, and I've got sweaters. And I can just crack a window open before she gets into the bedroom at night. No, it's about love, right? And also we see 1 Timothy 5:8 that a man is to provide for his wife. There are too many men out there who refuse to work. Or when they do work, they kind of develop this mentality. I had one of my first bosses was like this. His wife went to work and she made her money. And he went to work and he made his money. And one time he was telling me about an argument that they had where she did not have the money to cover her side of the bills. And she asked him to borrow the money to cover her side of the bills. And he said, no, because my money's my money and I'm buying this thing this week. So this paycheck needs to go to this thing I'm buying. I don't have the money to give you. And I looked at that and I wanted to punch him in the face were he not twice my size. Because that is not how a man provides for the home. Right? You handle the needs. Now, my very, I think, biblical opinions over two separate purses in the house aside, right? I think the man ought to be handling the responsibilities as far as that goes. Now, for the long, Danielle and I, we kind of swap back and forth. When I get tired of handling the bills, she handles them. When she gets tired of handling them, I handle them. But for the most part, both of us know exactly what's going on, and all the money goes into one place. Not that she's making money right now, but that's the way it went. The day we got married, the day we came back from our honeymoon, we put the wedding money into a singular account. It was my account. She got onto my account. It was a great day there at the bank. We just kind of cleaned some things up. She had, you know, her account. She's brought all of her money over to mine. I put all mine into that one, and we were good. And all that, it is always my responsibility to keep the lights on. It is always my responsibility to keep food in the fridge. It is always my responsibility to make sure those things are there. Now, obviously that's changed a little bit because the church takes care of us in that aspect. It's not like I'm out there grinding and working and, I guess I got to put in some overtime. We're blessed right now. But there was a time where I would have to sit there and she'd be like, all right, well, we were just remembering Caspian had surgery a year into his life. He had a little nodule in the back of his head and we had to pay for it somehow. So what do you do? All right, overtime, here we go. And then I put in the overtime and I got it done. And then when I was done and I noticed that family life was suffering a little bit, I dropped it back and I did the regular amount of work that I would do. That's my responsibility. I've known men that take on two jobs. I've known men that take on three jobs. And again, I'm not against a wife having a job. Even though Danielle doesn't have one right now, it works out well for us. But ask Maris. It is good to have homeschooling right now. It is amazing because there's 1,000 headaches we don't have. And it's just wonderful. Of all the terrifying things that are happening on the elementary grade levels right now, we're happy with it. But all the same, you know, she's got two different degrees. She's at any given time could go back into the workforce if need be. But for the most part, I ought to have some sweat on my brow. That's it. If there's problems in the house, I ought to have sweat on my brow. If there's things that need concern over, and providing doesn't just mean money. Right, I need to provide support. I need to provide spiritual guidance. I need to do all the things I'm supposed to. Men, your responsibility is to your wife. If she has a need, you are there for it. 1 Peter 3:7. Go there with me, if you will. 1 Peter 3:7. Not often one that's brought up in marital conversations, but it's very obviously. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. What do? I honor my wife, right? Now, what kind of forms does that take? Well, here's one. I'm never, and if I ever change on this, I pray the Lord do something hastily in my life. I will never look at my wife and say, well, that's my old lady. That's the old ball and chain. That's disrespect. That's not honor. This is what honor unto the weaker vessel. And oftentimes we take this and say, see, look, the woman is the weaker vessel. Yes, physically the woman is weaker. Yes, she's not able to do. But at the same time, we give honor to that, right? If my wife is out there and she's like, all right, listen, hon, I'm going to be home at 3 o'clock from the grocery store. Where am I? I'm waiting at 3 o'clock to bring the groceries in. Why? Because why should my wife be out there bringing in the heavy stuff? She can. The first thing I always say, I can do it. Of course you can. As a woman, of course you can. But why should you have to? Right? Why should you need to? Right? If God has given me a natural stronger frame and I'm a sturdy guy, why? Right? Again, it's giving honor. It's respect. It's love, Right? Why should you have to? Instead of she's there to serve my every need and whim and will, why should she have to do things? I should take care of this stuff. Right? My wife, she looks over at me this week. And here's the thing. There's this ongoing fight that's not really a fight in my house. Can I reveal a little bit to the Roland household? We've got a fight that's not a fight. I love Christmas. I love decorating Christmas. Now, I don't get into the secular music aspect of it, but I love it. I love decorating. I love the tree. I love the lights. I love all of it. Right? There are some people who try to convince me that it's not biblical, and I've got my arguments for it. I love it. Danielle pretends to hate it. But I know she loves it. You know what she said to me this week? And it's a sign that we're wearing the facade away. She goes, I'd like to get down there to see what we have left of our Christmas stuff. Because what we do is we've got a closet and my punching bag is in the way of it and she can't move that. So by saying I'd like to look at it, I know what she means. We're not going to just get that stuff out and then put it back in there. No, no. I know what we're doing. She wants to put that. I'm excited. But at no point does she say, we'll get down there and get it. No, it's love. It's honor. It's, you know, and maybe it's she's giving a little bit into me and maybe I'm giving a little bit into her. But that's again, the cleaving. Where she becomes a little bit more like me, I become a little bit more like her. And you know what? That's a good thing, but there's that honor. 1 Corinthians 7:3, the word benevolence to the wife is used. That means a physical care. I've known an amazing pastor one time. He retired out of the ministry, and he was full-time taking care of his wife. And the love that he showed for her and the care. And he would sit there, and he came and he taught a class to us when I was in college down in Cincinnati. And that was his one day of the week where he asked somebody to come and watch her for him while he would be out. And he would go out and he would stop, and he'd stop at McDonald's. He'd get a cup of coffee, which was remarkable because of the sludge he would make me make for him while he was sitting there in class. But he would stop off at McDonald's and he would read a little bit of scripture just to be out of the house. But he'd spend the rest of the week right there by her side, caring for her, loving for her, nurturing her, everything she needed. She was bedridden. She couldn't get up. She had her mental faculties, but her body had long since stopped, right? Loved her. Never once boo-hooed about it. Never once acted like it was a drudgery. It was almost as though he was pleased to be able to spend more time with her in that way. And again, we look at that, and that's valuable for us to have that love. And then you've got other people that sit there and kind of, again, treat their wives as though they're there for their own physical pleasure, their own enjoyment. All right? Don't ever have an opinion. Don't ever say no to me in this area. And again, I'm being very acrobatic in my word use here. I think you understand what I mean there, that we ought to care for their bodies just as much as anything else. Now, 1 Corinthians 7:5, on that realm, 1 Corinthians 7:5 tells us not to defraud or withhold from the wife. Now, I've never met a man that would actually do this. They would sit there and say, well, all right, honey, if that's the attitude you're going to have, you sleep in your own bed tonight. I've never met a woman who would mind. but at the same time, we get this idea that we're not going to, from the masculine point of view, we might even want to go to the more modern view of you're not going to sit there and go out there and fool around. I think I mentioned Martin Luther. If the wife's not in the mood, go find the maid. You're not going to do that. You're also not going to sit there and hold back if there's a certain physical need there in the relationship or a physical desire in the relationship. We're going to give ourselves to that. And then with all due respect in Scripture, it says, unless you're fasting or there's some kind of spiritual need being met here, don't hold back. Right? And again, of course, we'd also want to put in there any kind of physical barrier, physical issue, or again, just out of respect. It is not something, and I want to be careful with that too. I use the word need. Physical desire between spouses, the marital act, is not a need. You're going to be okay. you'll be all right. But at the same time, don't defraud. Don't hold back. Don't withhold unless it is necessary. Or there's it serves some kind of a spiritual focus. All right, Ephesians 5:23, the husband is to be the head of the wife and the home. Now, we've talked about this, but let's go ahead and just clarify just a little bit further. As the Lord tells me to live, as the Lord tells us how a Christian family should function, it's my responsibility as the man to make sure those things are being done. Again, when I say the Lord says I should be the spiritual teacher in the house. All right, so husband, as the leader, lead your family. Put a time to it. Put a plan to it, a practice to it, and make sure that everybody follows through on that. I will wake people up at 8 o'clock in the morning if I have to. That doesn't bother me. 8 o'clock in the morning is when we do our devotions. I will sit there and call up the stairs more gently now because we don't want to make Melody cry, which I get a hard time for. You would have shouted at us and you would have had us cry, and me crying would have woke everybody else up and you would have found that efficient. Yeah, but you can't do that to Melody. I'll sit there, I'll roll people out of bed. Now, thankfully, I've got two kids that you don't have to roll out of bed. Xander, he's up. The sun wakes him up, and he comes downstairs, and he starts his schoolwork, and everything's good. Caspian, you have to dig him out of the covers and carry him out and shake him alive. I've been half tempted to get him a cup of coffee from time to time. But then I'd be afraid of what the rest of the day would look like for us. They're different. Everybody's a little bit different. You got some people who are hard to get up, some people who spring up, and everything in between. But I'm the husband. I'm the man. I'm to lead the family. If I'm going to sit there and say, hey, listen, the finances are tight this week, husband, lead in being and acting like the finances are tight that week. If you sit there and say, hey, listen, what we're going to do is we're going to get ready and we're going to leave at this time because we're having issues at church. You should be aware if we're having issues getting to church on time, man. You should be aware of what's struggling inside the family, right? If my kids are struggling with something, some aspect, as the spiritual leader of my home, I'll not only ought to be aware of it, but I ought to be a help to that. And again, being a help to that doesn't always mean that I come in swinging and I'm shouting. No, what do? We got to address some things. We got to work on some things, right? I submit to the Lord, and then the rest of the family submits to me in that aspect. All right, so that's the men. Men, you ought to be men. You ought to act like men. There's nothing wrong with being men. We were kind of having that conversation, and Gideon got a hold of this. And if you can get him to say it, you'll get a treat. He goes, We were kind of talking about in a devotion, you go, be a man, do this, be a man, do that. And Gideon caught a hold of that. That was his favorite phrase for like two whole days. Be a man. And he'd come over, he'd say, how did he put it? He says, put your clothes away, be a man. Thought it was cute, like everything he did. All right, go to the bathroom, be a man. And then he'd stop and you think, well, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? Do I have to clean something? What do you mean by that? Be a man. We've lost godly masculinity. Speaking of things that we've lost biblical womanhood. Ephesians 5:25, we know that one very well, right? A wife is to submit to her husband in his exercise of leadership in the home. Now, people hear the S word, and they go, okay, submit means serve. Submit means I have no personality. Submit means I have no opinion. Submit means I have no brain. Don't even need that. I get married, I take the brain out, put it over here, and that's what's expected of me. And that riles a lot of people up because nobody likes the idea of pulling their brains out and setting it over here. Nobody likes that. That's not the biblical point of view that you have no brain. It is not the biblical point of view that you do not. It means that if it comes down to one or the other, you listen. Now again, the pressure is on the men to be somebody worth following. But wives, you need to follow your husbands. You need to love your husbands. In that way, Ephesians 5:33, that women are to reverence their husband. Again, same attitude. This is my old man. That old so-and-so. I hate that guy. Oh, he's such a bum. I wish he was like other men. No, love your husband. Now listen, I've known a lot of folks. We're once lost, once saved, right? We know a lot of folks like that. I came from a family like that. But my mom, I think, has done a pretty good job of loving her husband in that way. And that's important. Love, right? Have some kind of respect. Can I just point this out? And this goes for both husbands and wives. If you're looking for a problem, you're going to find it. Not a single one of us in here needs a reminder that we married a lost. Not a single person here needs to be reminded that we married a sinner. Right? We all did. Right? It's just a matter of where our hearts are after that. Right? Love each other. Guess what? You ladies, you probably ain't all that perfect yourselves. right? We need to have a certain reverence and a certain love for the husband. Now go to 1 Timothy 5:14. 1 Timothy 5:14. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house. Give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. Now, that's a very good list of things, but I want to focus on that phrase right there, guide the house. Now, for all those women that believe that biblical submission means I take my brain out and lay it aside and I reject submission because at any given time I should be just as much a boss as I am anything else. Guide. That's supposed to be the business of the woman. As a matter of fact, that is what he's made your minds for. That's what he's made your bodies to be able to do, right? You have a certain level of patience, a certain level of understanding that he did not quite give man. Man has his own level of understanding and his own level of patience, right? For instance, my wife and I working with the kids for their schoolwork on the rare occasions that I'm allowed to help. She'll sit there and 48 times go over with one of the kids. Loop it like this, right? With their handwriting, loop it like this, loop it like this, loop it like this. I'll get about five in there before I go, come on, right? Different levels of patience, right? Meanwhile, I'd be sitting there at work making the 58th phone call to somebody who's not paid their rent and still answer with all the sweetness in my voice that I'm paid to have. We're given different kinds of patience, different kinds of mentality. And women to sit there and say that housework, a life of raising children, and again, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have that if you can't have that if you have a job. My wife was able to balance that as well. She had a job, she was still able to do it, but she's able to do a lot better now. But to guide the home, okay. Again, any given time I can come home and I know exactly what we're going to have for dinner that day because she's got a plan. My wife has a plan down to a T. It takes a large amount of brain power to do what a stay-at-home mom does, right? It takes a lot to it. And anybody who's able to make that work under any... If you can pull off a grocery shop, you're doing all right because I struggle with it. My wife in and out of two stores within 2 hours. That was the last week, grocery shopping, 2 hours. In and out of two different stores, got everything we need down, and she's got it down to the quarter pound of chicken or whatever. Like she's got it all figured out. Everything has a plan. Whereas me, you send me out there, I'll be gone for 4 hours, and 10 to 1, I'm going to come back with stuff we don't need, and that bill will be 3 times what it should be. You understand? It is not a lesser work, right? It probably takes more to do what my wife and probably Maris does, than it does to run a business. I ran a business, and it was a lot easier than it was to step at home and try to help Danielle out. You understand? Don't ever sit there and look at guiding the house as a lesser thing, as many of the feminists would have us believe today. To stay in the house is a drudgery. It's not. Right? It's a wonderful thing to be able to have that time with your kids, to be able to guide the household and things. The Bible does not teach that it is absolutely wrong for a woman to get a paying job. As a matter of fact, we see women in the Bible who have jobs, especially in times of need. It's important for that to happen, but her number one priority is in the home. When a job causes a wife and her mother to neglect both husband and children, then that's where the husband, again, needs to step up and either do better at his job to get a raise or possibly consider being able to do more. Again, when Danielle and I were first married, she was finishing up her second degree and she was working a 30-hour job. That hurt me. I should have, you sit there and look back at some of the, well, it wasn't really a decision I made. I got sick and got fired. But all the same, it bothered me. It bothered me that she had to go through both at the same time and that she maybe got to spend 7 or 8 hours a week at home during the day, or 7 or 8 hours a day at home, and most of that was spent sleeping. The first priority needs to be there, and again, that's where men step in and make sure that that's possible. If your husband is not a Christian, follow the teaching of 1 Peter 3:1, and that word conversation means godly manner of life. Never set out to have some kind of a heart of disobedience or rejection. Again, I firmly believe that it is our responsibility to love our spouse whether they are lost or saved. Again, my mom kind of tried to show that, and she struggled with that as a young Christian. But I know one lady in particular who did everything she could and still does everything she can to show that love to her lost spouse. We can't sit there and kind of lord that over each other. Well, you don't know because you're not this and you're not that. But at the same time, we guide in the realms of godly things. It can be very awkward tightrope to be on. And it's a very awkward thing for me to stand up here and talk about. But again, I remind the folks, because I know we've got some folks here, that's the home I came from. And Mama made it work the best she could, okay? This is not... Again, when we're talking about husbands and wives, this is not to make anybody feel bad, but to show us the biblical responsibility that we have towards each other. When there are breakdowns in the marriage, typically it's between respect, communication, and leadership, right? It's always down to one of those three things. So we want to build those things up. And again, the closer the individual is to the Lord, the better things are in the marriage. All right, moving on. Parents' duty to their children. Psalm 127 verse 3 tells us that children are the Lord's heritage, right? All four of those little boogers I brought with me this morning belong to the Lord, and I treat them that way, and I love them that way. Yeah, I joke about them, but ultimately they're one of the greatest gifts the Lord ever gave me, right? They always have me laughing. They always have me sweating. They always have me working, and Melody always has me worrying. As Glenda came in today, did you hear me yell at her? I didn't yell at her, but I called her name out because I don't yell at her. She's the baby. But she was crawling up the stairs. So I come around the corner of the office, and she was down on the floor, and I couldn't find her, so I'm looking for her, and I come around this way, and she's on the second stair just sitting there. She's got one leg down, that perfect sitting position to fall down the stairs. Everything in me turned cold. Go get her. No. They are a heritage to us. Right? There's something that belongs to the Lord and something that was given to us to care for. Now, Proverbs 22, verse 6. This is another familiar one, and we'll end here. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. From there, we understand that verse. We've talked a lot about that verse, but it tells us who is responsible for raising your kids. Parents, who's responsible for raising the kids? The parents are. The parents should train up their children, not the school, not the television, right? It is the whole role of school to teach them what? The three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. Morality, responsibility, spirituality. That falls on me. That falls on mom and dad, right? Now, again, whether we're sending our kids to a public school or whether we're homeschooling them, right, it is still my responsibility as a parent to train them, right? It is not ours to sit there and go, well, the schools have failed our kids. Well, if you're coming home at 9 o'clock because you worked all day and then you went to the bar, you went out to eat with your friends, and you came home and you've got a 14 or 15-year-old who's sitting there in the room at all times, and they don't know how to handle life and they don't know how to handle responsibilities and they refuse to take any grown-up responsibility of their own, it is not the public school system. It is not the Christian school system. It's not even the one doing the homeschooling that's failed them. It's us. Now, again, if you teach them and they're still that way, that's on them. Right? That's a decision they're making. But it's our responsibility to teach them and to train them. We can't let that fall on anybody else. Again, we get this kind of thing that we ran into at Flat Rock all the time. Hey, you get the kids, they'll come into church, the parents will send their kids to church. You go to talk to the parents to give them the gospel. Oh, no, I think I'm a good person. I send my kids to church. It's not training them. It's not my responsibility to train them. I have them for 20 minutes during Sunday school, right? That's all I have. I cannot undo the other 7 days out of this week other than that 20 minutes of humanism, neglect, poor habits, what they're learning at school, the peer pressure they're under. I cannot, under that 20 minutes, train them if you refuse to do that at home, and you can't do that at home unless you get yourself to church. All right, so we'll stay right there for now. We'll come back to that next week. Let's pray. Heavenly Father,